This week on Bloodstream, von Willebrand disease has some guidelines. A landmark publication in the journal Blood this week provides patients, clinicians, policymakers, and researchers long-awaited standard recommendations for the management of VWD.
We've also got an outstanding update from one of our previous Believe 19 interview guests, and today we hear from another Believe 19 guest. Camille Proctor, founder and executive director of The Color of Autism, is with us.
People are autistic. That's a fact. People have been autistic for hundreds and thousands and even more years. It's always been here. How you deal with it, that's something different.
Hi all, I am your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am your other host, Amy Board.
Amy and I have something in common.
We do.
We're not doctors.
We're not.
So be sure to speak with medical professionals before making any healthcare decisions.
So thanks for listening. Subscribe to us and tell a friend. And hey, welcome to Bloodstream.
Big show, lots to get to. It's been a big week. We launched Flow this week. That's a big deal. That just came out yesterday. So hopefully everybody has subscribed and started listening to Flow with Jessica Richmond and Christy Van Horn. I painted this wall behind me and put our calendar, our blood feed calendar up. So that's like also enormous news to talk about.
And you have a plant. It's amazing. Like there's life.
A plant.
There's color. there's a calendar. It's
so
a lot.
So much happening.
It's a lot.
I think we still have some of these calendars, too, if people want them. So I'm not sure where we're supposed to send people these days. But if you're interested in one of these calendars, just bug Bloodstream Media on social somewhere, and we'll figure it out.
100%. So, we'll figure it out.
There it is. There's the Bloodfeed calendar. But before we go any further, hi, Amy.
Hi,
how
Patrick.
Are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm all right.
I'm all right, too.
I'm all right.
It's good. It's one of those weeks. It might be one of those days. But here we are. Glad to be with you. Glad to be with you.
Likewise. And this is a big deal. These VWD guidelines have been long awaited, and we'll chat a bit more about that just after I let you know, dear listeners, that the Bloodstream podcast is made possible, in case you forgot, by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. Yes, that is right, Takeda. They got a website, bleedingdisorders.com, where you can learn all about Takeda's resources for and commitment to the bleeding disorders community. Just this morning, Ms. Board, I was clicking around on their milestones tab where Takeda's got information on family planning, school-aged patients, young adult patients, and career counseling. That's a good one, career counseling. That page actually includes a video with lots of eye contact if you're into that sort of thing, so you can watch that video. And you can learn more by simply visiting bleedingdisorders.com. One more time, that's bleedingdisorders.com. And for their founding and ongoing support of the Bloodstream podcast, we would just like to say thanks, Takeda.
Thanks, Takeda.
So if you have listened to us for a while, if you listened to the Ask the Expert podcast, when we've done some VWD-specific episodes, if you're a person with von Willebrand disease or who lives in a house with von Willebrand factor deficiency of any kind, then you know that von Willebrand disease, its management, its diagnosis, really all aspects of it, have been somewhat difficult for our greater medical community to standardize. And there's a number of reasons for that. But the point today is that on January 12th, so just this week, the American Society of Hematology, more commonly known as ASH, published in its journal Blood guidelines on the management of von Willebrand disease. And this was a joint effort between ASH, the International Society on Thrombosis and Hemostasis, ISTH, the National Hemophilia Foundation, NHF, and the World Federation of Hemophilia. So a few of the most important national and multinational organizations working together to come up with these guidelines. The objective of them is to support patients, clinicians, and healthcare professionals in their decision-making about the management of VWD. So what I'd like to do is just kind of go through at the very beginning of this article, which is available for all. It's free online. You can find a link in the program notes, or you can search for the VWD guidelines from the American Society of Hematology. But just at the top, the methods, results, and conclusions, a little bit dense, but I think it provides a good overview for you to walk away with and for Amy and I to chat about for just a few minutes here. So the methods, these four organizations that I already mentioned, they put together a multidisciplinary guideline panel. There were three patient representatives included in that panel, and it was balanced to minimize potential bias from conflicts of interest. The University of Kansas Outcomes and Implementation Research Unit and the McMaster, I like this one, Grading of Recommendations, Assessment, Development, and Evaluation, or GRADE Center. University of Kansas Outcomes Implementation Research Unit and the GRADE Center of McMaster supported the guideline development process, including performing and updating systematic evidence reviews through November of 2019. So the panel prioritized clinical questions and outcomes according to their importance to clinicians and patients. The panel then used the GRADE approach, including GRADE evidence to decision frameworks, to assess evidence and make recommendations, which were subject to public comment. And you may recall, we talked about that here as well, mm-hmm. there was a window where there was interest in comment from the greater public. So if you contributed to that, well done and thank you. And know that it was taken seriously. It's mentioned right here in the methods of the officially published article in Blood. So the results, the panel agreed on 12 recommendations and outlined future research priorities. I was kind of thinking at first, oh, great, we could read the recommendations, but I got to be honest, taking them out of context, it's a little bit confusing. So I think it's better off for you on your own to kind of read them, talk with a doctor about them, but we do have these now. And the bottom line, the conclusions, these guidelines make key recommendations regarding prophylaxis for frequent recurrent bleeding, desmopressin trials to determine therapy, the use of antiplatelet agents and anticoagulant therapy, target von Willebrand factor and factor VIII activity levels for major surgery, strategies to reduce bleeding during minor surgery or invasive procedures, management options for heavy menstrual bleeding, shout out Flo, management of VWD in the context of neuraxial anesthesia during labor and delivery, and management in the postpartum setting. The article also includes information such as classifications of VWD, the major types and subtypes. So again, there's, you know, VWD type 1, type 2, type 2A. So they go through the various classifications, types, and subtypes. And there's a nice graph with different recommendations depending upon your grouping, as it were. So for patients with VWD and history of severe and frequent bleeds, there's one set of recommendations. Patients with VWD who are undergoing major surgery, there's another set of recommendations. Women with VWD with heavy menstrual bleeding, yet another, and so on and so forth. There are also recommendations that are made not only for patients and clinicians, but for policymakers and researchers as well. Finally, I would just like to say, we knew this was coming and mm-hmm. it's been highly anticipated, but Amy, seeing on what the 12th was, what, Tuesday, Monday, time is a flat circle, I think it was Tuesday, but seeing just how many of the clinicians, the hematologists and the doctors and advocates and patient advocates that we know of and talk about here often enough, who were posting about this mm-hmm. online and sharing each other's posts and the words that they were using, there was a lot of excitement and enthusiasm to finally be at this place where we now have some standard, universally accepted standard guidelines
right.
for the management of VWD. That's a big deal.
I remember when I interviewed Christopher Ng from the Colorado Treatment Center on Ask the Expert a year or two ago, specifically about von Willebrand's disease. I couldn't get anything out of him really, except for it's going to be really exciting when these guidelines come out. This is going to be the standardization of care. This is going to be a blueprint for all of these different factions: heavy menstrual bleeding, surgical procedures, all of the prophylactic treatment. I think so many mm-hmm. patients with VWD have had to advocate on their own, like, I think I should be on prophy, and a doctor's like, I don't know, and this will give standardization of when that's appropriate, when that's not, maybe some, you know, avenues to try. I am so excited to kind of get into these guidelines a little bit more and get nerdy about them. Just as a pledge to listeners, I think here on Bloodstream, we'll try to get some comments specifically about the guidelines. And then obviously the Flow team, which is our new podcast about extreme menstrual bleeding, we're going to get nerdy into these guidelines. All of our experts that work with us on Flow are have been involved in this and have flagged this. So we're very excited to push into these and more information to come.
And if there's anyone in particular that you listeners would like to hear speak about these guidelines what they mean in the clinic setting or with regard to future research, please let us know, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com, or hit us up on social media. As Amy said, we will be bringing people through to speak about these in more depth than we did today, but definitely wanted to kick off the first show after these guidelines were released by just acknowledging what a moment this is. This is really important. And sometimes big moments are, you know, relatively quiet as, you know, compared to other world events, so to speak. But this is a big moment for our community and for the very many people who are affected by von Willebrand disease. You know, hemophilia is a rare disease. It affects less than 200,000 people in the United States. That's the classification of a rare disease per the National Organization of Rare Diseases. Von Willebrand disease is not. Von Willebrand disease is much more prevalent, but it is underdiagnosed. Mm-hmm. It is mismanaged so mm-hmm. often, and people go through their entire lives sometimes not knowing why they're bruising and experiencing pains in this chronic way. So again, we're just kind of like repeating the point here, but now that we have something we can all look at and agree upon, it just makes this more difficult disease of von Willebrand disease a little bit easier to wrap arms around. And it means that there's more options now for patients and families, which really is the bottom line.
If you're having trouble finding these guidelines, if you're on NHF's mailing list, they send out an email today, which is Wednesday. So obviously this episode comes out Friday, but on the 13th, check your inbox. It's in there. It's in that recent email from NHF. Should be online, should be on the website, and we'll include it in our program notes as well. So you can read these guidelines. Great bedtime reading. Holla.
Great bedtime reading. Well, yes. Yeah, I mean, for some, probably. it would actually probably be more relaxing than some of my recent bedtime reading. But that is for another podcast. We have a very compelling interview today with another one of our Believe 19 guests, Camille Proctor, the founder and executive director of The Color of Autism. A reminder, we started these Believe 19 interviews interviewing executives, founders, and other people of importance to nonprofit organizations that we felt shared some type of kindred spirit. We're doing something that we found interesting. This Believe 19 effort was born out of Juneteenth last year, and we still have a number of those interviews in the can that we'll be releasing over the coming weeks while we continue to compile more. But this is our first update.
Yeah,
I
we
believe,
have an
from
update.
We haven't had this before. Like, hey, I guess we actually have a studio. We could have sound effects, but I'm just going to do it that way.
Okay, it's cool. It's cool. It's cool. It's cool.
But what's our update, Amy?
We have a cool update today. Listeners might recall my Thanksgiving time interview with Philadelphia youth basketball founder and CEO Kenny Holdsman, also happens to be our producer Greg's dad.
It's Greg's dad.
So it's very exciting to like hear this update from the source, from like the house that Kenny built directly. So Greg, we would love to know the extremely exciting and like mission building update that Philadelphia youth basketball wants to share.
Yeah, thanks guys. So after 5 years watching my dad work incredibly hard, they finally got their first major capital gift of $5 million. Incredible. It was given by Alan Sixman Horowitz. He is a Sixers super fan. That's why he's known as the Sixman from Philly, born and raised. He is the founder of Campus Apartments, which builds a bunch of, you know, college housing. And they've been working on him for a while now, and he came through with a major gift that's going to propel them to build or to start building the Youth Basketball Education and Community Empowerment Center in North Philadelphia that will begin building at the end of 2021 and is set to be complete by 2022. So all of my dad's hard work, their whole team's hard work is paying off. And there was a giant article in the Philadelphia Inquirer written earlier last week. They have a giant gala tonight. Today we're recording on Wednesday, January 13th. They're hoping to raise another $750,000 tonight at the gala. So there's tons of momentum. And, you know, I have to admit, like, my dad's optimism and positivity throughout this time, you know, I myself have doubted the ability to actually raise the money, but they're well on their way to raising all the money needed to really build the center. And this first gift is going to propel them to get there.
As a reminder, Philly Youth Basketball is a mentoring organization, a leadership organization for the youth in Philadelphia through the sport of basketball and teamwork and camaraderie through the sport of basketball. So a center, what would that mean for the organization and the mission going forward? What will the building represent?
Yeah, that's a great question. So much. It's just really the power of space and place to really have this hub, this location for people to, for kids in Philly to identify with and to go to on a regular basis. It's a safe space. It's where they can, you know, operate functionally their basketball programming, their education. There's going to be a health and wellness suite, you know, weight room, a healthy food commissary, a Philadelphia Basketball Hall of Fame. It's really going to be, in my mind, the cultural and physical hub of basketball in the city.
Has your dad been working toward this specific goal for these 5 years, or when did this center and the vision for it come into focus?
Yeah, the center has always been the number one goal. Mm-hmm. And for a couple years, that was, you know, almost the entire focus, along with building the concept for what PYB, Philadelphia Basketball, was going to be. But along the way, my dad got advice. It was actually the advice of Phil Martelli, who was the coach at St. Joe's University. He's now the assistant at Michigan. The advice was like, yeah, in the meantime, like, you might as well start doing some programming. And that's when the middle school partnership program developed and the collegiate summer camp series. So in the meantime, they've been building out the program, you know, in amazing ways. And it's fully up and running. While the center has been ideating and even while the construction is happening, there is so much programming growth within PYB, but the ultimate goal has always been to build this incredible state-of-the-art space for the youth in Philly.
Greg, I think you have such a cool perspective of this because you are, you know, an outsider yet an insider to this. So tell us, like, over these past couple of years, what has it been like to watch your dad build a relationship with Alan, this potential donor? What has it been like, you know, to be on the sidelines watching that?
Well, I mean, a bunch of stuff comes up. I mean, first of all, like, my dad and the team at PYB, like, it I wouldn't necessarily call them failures, but I mean, they've struck out with a lot of potential big donors. Hmm. In terms of that would fit the mission of PYB in terms of being big, yeah, basketball people, obviously very wealthy. And Alan was, he honestly makes a ton of sense. He's super authentic Philly. Like, you'll hear him talk in the clip we're about to play. But he has this strong Philly accent. He's like blue collar, huge basketball fan, and has been looking for a legacy gift. This is by far the most money he's given to any organization. And the center will be named the Alan Horwood Six Man Center. And I'm sure, like,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm sure the center will end up being referred to, you know, as the Six or the Six Man Center, which will be really cool.
Yeah.
But this is really going to be his legacy gift. And I have had the pleasure of meeting Alan. I had him on my Philly Famous podcast last March. He was incredibly kind, very genuine. The next night, he actually gave me tickets to the Sixers Lakers game. I walked down to the court. The security guard tried to stop me from walking down, and Alan was like, "Hey, Greg, come on down." You know, they let me down. I spoke to him for a few minutes. He's the most genuine Philly guy you can meet, and you'll hear in the clip. But he, you know, he's been a supporter of PYB for a while now, and, you know, put his money where his mouth was, and he's really the major reason why PYB is going to succeed in building the center it's dreamed of.
Mm. Well, let's hear from Alan. I can't wait to hear from Alan.
Yeah. Set up this clip. What are we going to hear? What are we going to hear in this clip?
You're going to hear Alan's opinions on why PYB is needed, why it's important, and you're going to hear some praise that he gives my dad. You know, that was a cool part about reading the article that released earlier last week. Alan basically said the major reason why he chose PYB to give all this money to was that he believed in the leadership of it, and he saw my dad's passion and genuine desire and efforts to help Philly as a city, help the youth in Philly, and that was the major reason why he decided to give the $5 million.
And then lastly, I know you're heavily involved in youth basketball in Philadelphia. What kind of organizations are you involved with, and why is that important to you?
Oh, geez, I've always loved the game of basketball, and over the last few years, I've gotten more involved with several organizations, and one of them is the Philadelphia Youth Basketball, and geez, its CEO is such a great guy. His name is Kenny Holzman.
I know him a little bit.
Yeah, I understand you do, who I've known for a while, and Kenny is just so dedicated to improving the lives of young children. The Philadelphia Youth Basketball is they're using the game of basketball. It enables young people, especially those from the under-resourced communities, to develop the potential as the students and athletes and positive leaders. It's such a great organization.
Alan Horowitz, the sixth man whose name will now be on the Philly Youth Basketball state-of-the-art center that is being built. Congratulations to Kenny Holzman. Congratulations to all the leadership at the Philly Youth Basketball organization. And if you want to hear more of that interview, Alan's obviously quite a character. You can check out Greg's Philly Famous podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. He also has a bunch of other episodes with interesting guests from the great state of Pennsylvania and the city of Philadelphia. That's on the Philly Famous podcast with Greg Holzman.
Oh, I just get goosebumps thinking and kind of reflecting on that story. And I think the thing that inspires me the most from a former nonprofit, in the trenches worker, is that they struck out with so many people that felt so aligned. Yeah. And just how that is. Yeah. And we're going to transition into another interview with one of our Believe 19 organizations that is in a different life cycle than Philly Youth Basketball. Philly Youth Basketball now, just with this gift, has like propelled themselves into another tier of the work that they're going to be able to do and the impact they're going to be able to provide to the city of Philly. And I think this next organization is in a different life cycle and is so valuable. And the work that they do, I think, at a grassroots level, family to family, is so wonderful. So I'm so excited to transition, celebrate, of course, with Kenny Holzman and Philly Youth Basketball. And we're going to transition into our next Believe 19 segment with Camille Proctor, founder and executive director of The Color of Autism. I'm here with Camille Proctor. She is with The Color of Autism, and she is here on our Believe 19 segment. Camille, how are you? And thank you for joining us.
I'm well.
Camille, can you give us an introduction to Color of Autism and the work that you all do, and what are the needs in the community that your organization serves so uniquely?
Sure. Well, The Color of Autism Foundation, we support families in underserved communities affected by autism spectrum disorders. And the need is great because there's a huge disparity from getting the diagnosis. Typically, an African-American child will get a diagnosis at age, we'll say 4. Some get them as late as 10 years old, believe it or not. And that's from a lack of access to quality service and just access to resources. So the goal for the Color of Autism Foundation is to squash the disparity and to be the connecting thread to people or families, services, and just getting them on a path of self-efficacy.
What are the early signs of autism?
Well, there's a lot of different things. Typically, the one that stands out like a sore thumb is just delayed speech. Delayed speech, often we have stimming, flapping, noises, processing issues, aversions to food. So the list is quite long, but the biggest one is lack of communication, the inability to communicate, as well as sensory issues, not being able to hear loud noises, aversion to lots of things. What I mean by that, like, taking your child into Target may drive them, take them over the edge because it's just too much.
How is the organization tackling and serving the issue of misdiagnosis, in particular in Black communities, misdiagnosis of autism and that late diagnosis? How are you guys serving that issue in particular?
So the first thing we do that I think some of the other mainstream organizations don't do, we have to meet parents where they are, right? And so we can have that difficult conversation with them. For example, many times there's a lot of pushback on the autism diagnosis. The parents don't want to hear it. So that's sort of like an indicator to a physician or a professional to say something else. What we say is this, you know, it's the diagnosis is necessary if it is in fact autism. We try to encourage them that it's not a death sentence. People are autistic. That's a fact. People have been autistic for hundreds and thousands and even more years. It's always been here. How you deal with it, that's something different. If you don't provide support for your child, you don't provide the love and care that they need, it will be a death sentence. So it's important for them to know that when someone says your child is on the autism spectrum, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world. What it means is that you have to give them a lot of support.
You offer a training program for caretakers, Spectrum of Care. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the value of that program and what that program entails for caretakers in particular?
Sure, absolutely. So the Spectrum of Care, I like to call it the it's a 6 weeks training that is mandatory. You have to take all 6 weeks. You can't drop in for a potty training. You have to take the 6 weeks. Why do they have to take the 6 weeks? Because we cover everything from early intervention, transition services, hygiene, you name it, in that 6 weeks. And it's facilitated by professionals that are in healthcare and in behavioral healthcare. We even cover dental hygiene. We have a dentist come in and talk about good oral hygiene. Why do we do this? The reason we do this is because Spectrum of Care as a program is meant to be replicated. We want our families to go out into the community and replicate the things that they learned in Spectrum of Care so that they can provide this information to someone else. And based on the skills that they learn and how now comfortable they are, they can lead others in the community, as well as push the pendulum forward in regards to acceptance and push the pendulum forward in regards to getting parents to get early diagnosis.
Tell me about your experience personally working in this community about the stigma of autism. How does that affect families?
It affects families in many different ways because no one likes the unknown, right? And so there tends to be, especially in communities of color, there tends to be embarrassment, meaning, oh, he's doing that again. Oh, don't let him do that. Oh, what are my neighbors going to think? Oh, what's my family going to think? And then people, and parents in particular, they don't understand because they see these behaviors, right? And they're behaviors that they're not accustomed to. Sometimes they're self-injurious behaviors. There's a lot of things going on. But what gets away from us parents most of the time, and I'm guilty of it too, is that it's not really about us. It's about our children. So when you take us out of the equation and we look at just who we're supposed to be supporting, puts perspective back into it. And this is what I try to get parents to understand. We have to be supportive of these individuals, whether they be children, because now I have adults coming to me well into their 50s saying, I just got diagnosed a couple years ago. So we have to build a circle of support. And that's really what Spectrum of Care is. We have wraparound services. So we have to create a spectrum of care for individuals on the autism spectrum in our community.
How can our listeners contribute to the work that you do? And if we have a family that's listening that maybe is struggling with autism or a diagnosis or a misdiagnosis, how can they get connected to you?
Sure. Well, our website is thecolorofautism.org. Our email address, and it's a general email, but I see most of them, is info@thecolorofautism.org. And we can also be contacted by phone, and that phone number is 313-444-9035. And we help families nationally. Now, I have to give a disclaimer. We're in Detroit, Michigan, but we have partnerships with therapy clinics and other therapeutic partners throughout the United States, as well as overseas in some cases. So if there's a parent in need of assistance, they just give us a call. We try and figure out what would be the best pathway for them to get the assistance they need, and we go from there.
Camille, thank you so much for being with us today. The organization is Color of Autism, and we've been speaking with Camille Proctor. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Camille Proctor, for joining us, The Color of Autism. You can check them out, follow links in the program notes, or Google The Color of Autism to learn more about their mission, vision, and values, and find out how you can get involved. Thanks as well to Greg for his cameo and for giving us that update about Kenny Holdsman, our previous Believe 19 guest, and Philly Youth Basketball's excellent piece of news. That's really exciting to be able to have had Kenny on just a few months ago and to be able to share a little bit in this extraordinarily exciting news. So thank you for that. Reminder, you can find Greg's podcast, Philly Famous, wherever you listen to podcasts. And as long as you're going around clicking on new podcasts to subscribe to, one last reminder for this episode anyway about Flow, our new podcast for people who experience extreme bleeding. Straight talk about extreme bleeding. That's my favorite version of the tagline. You can find that podcast as well as Philly Famous wherever you listen to podcasts.
And I have to say, just a plug for next week, we've got a really exciting interview. I'm not going to say anything about it. if we had a studio, it would be dun.
Like, there you go. No, right? We just do the noises ourselves.
Right. That's right. We're just going to do the noises ourselves. Check it out next week. Also check out Flow. I got the Flow glow. We're so excited about Flow.
You do have the Flow glow. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, listeners, as always. Thanks again to Takeda for being the presenting sponsor of the Bloodstream podcast, bleedingdisorders.com, to learn more. And with that, that is all for this episode. You have a bleeding disorders or a health topic you'd like to hear us discuss more? Is there an expert or guest that you're dying to hear from? You want to inquire about casting opportunities for Bloodstream's narrative and docu-styled podcast series? Well, you can email us, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com, or connect with Bloodstream Media on social media. You'll find Bloodstream Media on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Or you can follow Amy Board or Patrick James Lynch on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users out there, including you, Amy Board. Check out the program notes for this episode in your podcast player or on bloodstreammedia.com, where you'll find links and information related to the stories and segments featured on this episode. I am your host, Patrick James Lynch.
Hey, I'm that other host, Amy Board.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.